I'm Joe Bendosky, and you're listening to Start Writing. This week, we have an interview with the author David Wright and his book that has just come out a couple days ago, A Travel Guide to Murder. I've read it. It's written very well. He has published a lot of short stories, and you can very much see that style within the book. Each chapter almost works as an episode on its own. And I think if you're a writer of short stories, it's definitely one to pick up and look at how he's crafted each of those chapters and see what makes them work so well and how they could work as a standalone. This week in critiques, we actually have something from Song of Locke. I've been rereading it recently, and I came across this line, and I hope Jay hears this episode, and I think he'd have some interesting things to say. So here's the line. The pike clattered onto the dirt and rocks. And as I read that, going through it word by word, the pike clattered onto the dirt, I stumbled right there because I thought, things don't clatter on dirt. That's kind of not the sound that happens when it hits dirt. And then it said, and rocks. And I was like, but it would if it hit the rocks. And even though it's in the same sentence, I would actually recommend reversing that order so that it would say, the pike clattered onto the rocks and dirt, because then it doesn't cause that stumble for me as a reader where I disagree with the author's choice there. And so it's just a simple flip, but it stood out to me as I was reading this week, and I thought that I would point it out. And here is the interview with David. This is David Wright. Why don't you start off by telling us about your latest book and kind of the hook and the premise that it falls in, and maybe compare it to a well-known author so people kind of get a feel for what you're writing and the audience you're trying to reach.
Right. Okay. So my latest is a series. I wrote three novels over the past 2 years, and they're called A Travel Guide to Murder. And that's the title of the very first one. And then it goes A Travel Guide to Murder, and then he goes to Hawaii, and then he goes to the Caribbean. So that's generally the idea. He's going to travel all around the world with this travel guide to murder. Now, the hook is, this is a retired FBI agent, and he's traveling the world with his estranged wife. That's what I said in the promo, but it's not exactly a estranged wife, but there's some problems with their relationship, so he's trying to rebuild his relationship with his wife. But unfortunately, at the same time, he's encountering serial killers who he hunted before when he was an FBI agent, and he was unable to catch them, and now he encounters them, and violence ensues. In fact, murder happens. So that's the hook for the series. And yeah.
So okay, so this is my like one sentence pitch for your book. I spent my whole career hunting serial killers. I never thought it would turn me into one.
Oh, fantastic. Now, you copyrighted that, or can I use it too?
No, go ahead. Throw that on there.
I really like that. Thanks, you, Joseph. That's good.
I felt like it kind of encompassed the whole story. And for me, as I've been reading through the book, like that's kind of what happened. Like,
yes.
He's hunted these people forever, and he just has so much rage built up about the things that they've done, and then he starts killing them off, and so he's becoming a serial killer.
Okay, spoiler alert.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, it happens in like the first 20 pages of the book.
Yes, okay, so. That's true. So. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think you captured it very well there. I'm not sure that I was really going to do that. I think I started writing, and then I got to that one encounter with the serial killer. And then that's sort of where it went. And then after that, I thought, okay, this is really what I want to do with the series. Have these encounters with these serial killers and then see where they go. And like you said, okay, they went in most times, they go in his favor and he comes out on top. But it changes him. He, like you said, he starts to become a serial killer. And maybe he's working for the good guys, but still, this is not the way you should do it. Right. So that's his dilemma. That's his paradox.
So, okay, let me, I got to dig this up real quick. I want to pull up, well, actually, before I pull up some quotes, Why don't you talk to me? You said you're a teacher, so are you teaching creative writing, English? What is it you're teaching?
Yes, I've been teaching high school English from grade 8 to 12 for the past 18 years. So this is my 19th year doing this. And I usually don't get the students to write about murder, but sometimes they do anyways. But I teach in a Christian school, so I also have to be a little bit careful of the subject matter I have. But kids are kind of cool because they don't take it so seriously. So they will explore all sorts of things that we might say, hey, maybe you shouldn't talk about that. But that's okay. They go for it. They write their stories. And so sometimes I'll have a premise where, you know, if you come into a room and there's a dead body, what do you do? And things like this. And so over the years, they've kind of surprised me with some of the things that they've come up with. And I don't think any of that is in my novel, but just the fact that I do like to work with writers, and in high school, I get a lot of interesting things happen there.
So, okay. So I believe you mentioned that you have a course, a workshop. Do you want to talk to me about that?
Right. So this, I just started this up. I was working on web page and making my own web page for a long time because, you know, I'm not a web designer and I'm not an artist by career path. And so, but I was still interested in those things. And my two of my daughters both ended up going, unfortunately, they didn't follow in my footsteps and become English teachers, but they are still well-read. And then, but they went into computer programming, and they worked a lot with website design. And then they also worked with my one daughter was heavily into art, so they, you know, working with Photoshop and things like that. And they didn't want to make my webpage for me for free, which probably because I was the ideas I had. My one daughter was supposed to make a webpage for her school project, and then she, the ideas I was coming up with, the things I wanted to do, she says, "You can't do that. It's impossible. I've got to make this thing in 2 weeks for school. I can't do this." So she made something else. She never even did show me what she made. But that was the impetus, because I started drawing what I wanted on the page and sketching it and showing her. And she started working on it until she realized it was too much work. Mm. So 2 years later, I did all of those things myself. And whenever I'd run into a problem, I would talk with one of the two of them, and they would straighten it out in a few seconds after I'd been working on it for weeks. So that's just the way it is. So when you get old, your brain's not as flexible, I think. But I was able to get there. So yeah, the webpage is all completely me from scratch, working from the very beginning. And then the idea of the webpage is to promote young new authors. So hopefully many of my students in school, I'll be able to use that with them. They can get published on the internet with their parents' permission. And then also people out there. Nobody knows about it yet. So people out there on the internet can also contact me and get their work published. And then eventually I would have the printed versions be available on Amazon. And so that's kind of like that's the beginning of like a workshop. And then they can also, other authors, oops, I bumped the mic. Other authors can have their work, if they're published somewhere else, they can send me a link, and then I will put that up on the webpage and then promote their work for free. So that's kind of the idea. So you scratch my back and I scratch yours.
All right. Sounds good. Okay. So let's talk a little bit more about your book and writing craft in general. So initially, maybe before I dig into the quotes here, what do you consider the strongest part of your writing, and how did you develop it, or how would you teach it to others?
Right. I started off writing short stories. And usually, like, my method for writing a short story is I would have something that intrigued me. And many writers have said this in a different way, but for me, it was like a something caused a sense of awe in my mind. Something would spark my imagination. And because most of my stories are actually speculative science fiction stories, usually it had something to do with that. Something in nature or science would spark, and I'd just be kind of like surprised by it. And then that would be the inspiration for it. And then I would sort of write the story and create the setting, and whether it was in the future or whether it was in the past, something to work around and kind of exploit this idea so that I could create that sense of awe in the reader. That was the idea, to recreate that sense of awe. Now, with short stories, that I didn't really have to think too much about plotting, because I it was short. It was I could sort of just sort of run with it, see where it went, and then sometimes it would fail, but sometimes it would get to some point where there'd be some surprise conclusion at the end. But at some point, after doing, you know, maybe 100 of these short stories, like,
wow.
Yeah. 50 of them got published. So that's kind of cool. This is over a long period of time, like 20 years of sending out to different magazines. Because, you know, I have a full-time job. It's not like I could send out 100 stories every year, but I would, you know, was try and send out 20 stories, 10 stories a year. And then anywhere from 1 year, I got 12 published in 1 year. So that was a banner year. And then usually maybe about 4 or 5 would get published in 1 year. And then, but there was some point, in fact, it was the, hockey's a big thing in Canada. Where are you, Joseph?
Utah.
Okay. So you probably don't know about this, even know what hockey is maybe down there. You've heard of it though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So in Canada, hockey's the big thing. And so this one year, the hockey season was canceled. The whole season was canceled. So there was no hockey. So me and a buddy of mine had to do something with their spare time. So we wrote a novel together. And then we were going to do more of this, but then hockey season came back the next year. And so my friend was out. That was it. He was back to hockey, watching hockey on TV. But I had all the spare time because I'm not a great sports fan. So I started writing, but I wanted to write something longer than... To get that kind of, because it's an awesome feeling when you accomplish this short story, but then it's done and it's over. And then you kind of have I wanted to extend that, that joy or pain or whatever it is that you go through as a writer. I wanted to extend it over a longer period of time. So I started trying to tackle a novel. And so the first novel was a historical novel. So I had to do a lot of research as well.
Is that, Flight of the Cosmonaut?
Yeah. Flight of the Cosmonaut. So that required a whole lot of research into the Phantom Cosmonauts, Yuri Gagarin, and all of that, development of, trying to get into space that took place in the late 50s and early 60s. And then, so that was a lot of fun learning all about that, but also crafting my very, very first novel, not counting the other one I did with my friend. That one was really, it wasn't structured well. I would write a chapter and he would write a chapter, and then sometimes they never matched up, and sometimes the characters' names would change, their nationalities would change, and we never ever did fix the thing. It's still sitting there.
Oh, that's funny.
Yes, it was a lot of fun. But this other one, you couldn't do that. When you write a novel, it needs to, everything, you have to have, what's it called? I should know this word. It has to have continuity, right? So you can't just change the character's name halfway through or something like that. So learning, what I learned anyways was to work on plotting over a long period of time and developing that story arc and then coming to a rousing conclusion what we learn in English class is called a denouement. So working through all of those phases in the novel, plotting, was something that was kind of new to me. I learned a new word. There's plotters and there's pantsers.
Right.
And yeah, so you know this?
Yeah. Well, and there's multiple words for it. Like there's also what they refer to them as architects and gardeners.
Okay, architects and gardeners. Okay, so... gardener. I guess I was a gardener more in my instinct was just to write from the seat of my pants. That's where pantser comes from.
Yeah.
And then that's why some of them would just fail because I'd get to the end and I wasn't, I wasn't able to get where I wanted to go. And I didn't know where it was going anyways. It was just a process kind of subconsciously working through my brain. And I didn't really know what was going on. And then I would get to the end and I didn't know how to fix it. So that's where you wish you were a plotter. But I had to learn with a novel, I really had to learn how to do both. And that, so that was kind of the with that first novel, that was where I was learning how to do that, how to plot out a novel from beginning to end and make everything try to match up. I'm not saying it's a masterpiece, probably isn't. It's been a while since I've read it, but the learning curve was there. So then the next time around, which was Codename Vengeance, I went backwards in time. I was so intrigued by the information I learned from Flight of the Cosmonaut that I went backwards and started looking at the vengeance weapons that that the Germans were developing, like the V2 rocket. And so that's what that novel was about, the vengeance weapons. And the guy who can I give a blurb for that one?
Sure, go ahead.
Sure. Okay, so the guy, the hero, he's starts off, you think he's an American pilot who's going to be over there flying for the British in an experimental plane, and then he shoots down two of the British pilots, and then he lands in Germany. And then you find out, oh, actually, he's a German spy, and he's returning with secrets for making these vengeance weapons, secrets that he's stolen, like from, spoiler alert, for nuclear weapons that he's stolen from the Jewish German scientists who had escaped into America. So he comes back with these secrets, but in reality, he is not there for that. His fiance was a Jewish woman, and when he finds out that what was happening with the Jews, or he suspects, he has come back to try and rescue her. So that's the plot line for that one. So I was working through plotting with that one as well. And this process sort of led to, it was fun doing those two novels. And I had planned to do more, but unfortunately I had no idea how to promote anything. So I'm not sure anybody ever read them besides a few of my friends. So then I never did write sequels. I would have. If people had read them, I would have written sequels. So I think there's a third novel.
Elf Lord.
Oh, Elf Lord, right. Then I kind of got obsessed.
Okay, so yep. I'm looking at your Amazon here. I don't see the one about the German. I've got Flight of the Cosmonaut and Elf Lord. I don't have this German spy one up here.
Right, yes. Codename Vengeance, I actually put on Smashwords as an ebook.
Okay.
I never, it's for free. I also recorded that one as an audiobook to sort of just to do it. And so if it's free there, I can't put it on Amazon.
Oh, actually you can. What you do is you put it on Amazon first, then you put it on Smashwords, then you tell Amazon it's free elsewhere and they'll make it free. And that's how you get into the Amazon perma-free world.
Great. And that's what I plan to do.
So definitely a lot of authors do it. I mean, it's a big part of the indie model is you have one piece of work that's free just to get people a taste without them having to risk anything. And if they like it, then they read your other work.
Right. Yes. Yeah. So I do want to do that as well. But then Elf Lord was fantasy. So I guess I branched out into fantasy. I don't know. Do you know R.A. Salvatore?
I do. Yeah. I think I'm in the fourth book of the Drizzt series at the moment. Oh,
fantastic. Yeah. So I read every single one of those Drizzt Do'Urdens. And then I wrote a novel, which, okay, I'm saying this, but I totally ripped him off because I liked him so much that I created the character. I started writing the book. And then once I took a look at what I was doing, I realized it was a complete copy of this character. So then I had to change the character a bit. I couldn't rip him off that much. And I changed the world enough that it's different. It's different than Drizzt Do'Urden's world, but I still love that.
And I think Salvatore's advantage is he's writing in the world of Dungeons & Dragons, right?
That's true.
So he's not actually world building.
He isn't. Yep.
Yeah. He's just writing in it.
He did create the best character in that world, but he didn't create the world, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. So kind of different that way. So talk to me about this multi-genres. You're writing historical fiction. You're writing thrill. You know, the book that I read, Travel Guide to Murder, is a thriller. And then we've got fantasy. So talk to me about splitting off in so many directions. And I guess, are you concerned about that impacting your audience and targeting and stuff like that?
Yeah, I have to say, like, I never really gave much thought to audience. Like, I obviously did not approach this as a professional author, and that's maybe a problem. But I realize that when I go and read an author, like, say, R.A. Salvatore, I'm really only interested in his Dries de Werden novels. And although I've read some of his other fantasy novels, I mean, I know he writes other stuff as well. I have a Tarzan book on my bookshelf by him, but I've never read it. Because you kind of get typecast as author. It's worse than an actor being typecast in movies. An author gets typecast that, like, that you just assume that this is the only thing they could do. But as readers, I don't know, but I don't stick in one genre. I read, I don't know, practically everything. I've read Pride and Prejudice, and I'm a man. So I just don't think it, I guess it, maybe that gives me the freedom because I'm an indie author. I can write whatever I feel like, and long as I'm not worried that nobody is ever going to read it, it doesn't matter. But I would like people to read it. I do want people to read the novels I write. But I guess, yes, I don't know. So I'm a little conflicted. Maybe I should have stuck in one genre, or, you know, established an audience in one genre. I don't know. But I didn't. So maybe because it's more hobby at this point than it is career, then maybe that's why I didn't really worry about going into just genres. I just wrote whatever was interesting to me
at the time. Okay.
Yeah.
So what is an element of your writing that you're working on developing right now, your craft, and how are you going about that?
Yes. So I talked a little bit about plotting, but now I one thing that I think is a weakness because I'm not a plotter by nature is that I'm looking up in front of me right now. I have this bulletin board in which I have put up all of this information for the Travel Guide to Murder, because now I can't just, it's not just one novel I was trying to accomplish.
Right, yeah.
I was thinking of maybe writing 10 of these novels. And so now I can't remember everything. Like I trying to remember, you know, when the guy's born, you know, what's his favorite flavor of ice cream? Is he left-handed, right-handed? All of these things. So now I have to put them up on the wall so that I can go back and reference to them. I think I heard about Harry Potter, and J.K. Rowling writes, she wrote that awesome series. It's like the best-selling series ever. Mm-hmm. But she actually had people that would fact-check her. Because she couldn't keep track of, it was funny. Just too big for the human brain to remember all of these little details. But if you screw them up, believe me, somebody will tell you.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Some of those fans, they know the book better than the authors do.
Right. It's like Star Trek, you know, the cult fans for Star Trek, you know, when they make a mistake, guess what? Everybody in the world is going to know about it.
Yeah.
So that is something I'm working on. I still don't know how to do that, how to create like a Bible for a series so that I can keep track of everything, or even just within a novel, just trying to make sure I have continuity throughout the novel is something I still struggle with. And I'm still developing a system. If you have any advice, please let me know.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think George R. R. Martin has an incredibly vast and complex series, and he's a gardener. You know, he's a panster.
Yes, I totally believe he is.
So, and I think his approach is he just does a lot of revisions, and that's how he catches all the little stuff that develops.
So, right.
Yeah.
So are you still waiting for him to ever finish his series?
Well, there have been chapters.
Those as well.
Yeah, so there have been a few chapters released, but so he did a reading at Comic-Con. And naturally, that chapter was eventually leaked out. He takes 5 to 6 years between books.
Yes, yes he does, which is so frustrating for a fan. Because I was blown away by R.R. Martin. I thought he was, the next Tolkien, except with a lot more swear words. But then... But then it was so frustrating because, the TV series catches up and then passes him. Finished before he ever writes the last book or two.
They're already ahead of him by quite a bit. And I think and if you watch the newer episodes, the magic is just not what it was. The set pieces are not as strong and there are still surprises that they throw in there.
Yeah.
But they don't have the red herrings to support them. They literally come out of nowhere.
That's kind of cheating.
So it's totally cheating, and they're just building off of the fact that they had this strong foundation. So
yeah.
So I was really disappointed with the post Martin episodes.
Okay, so yes, that would be something I'm working on to try and develop.
But yeah, okay, sounds good. So is there anything, I imagine you see a lot of writing that just drives you crazy being an English teacher. But let's say when you pick up a novel somebody's put out there, what is something that drives you crazy or makes you just say, nope, not reading this, I'm done?
The modern trends in writing, especially in the thriller genre, they really frustrate me.
What are those trends? Tell me.
One of them is they've given up on describing. They've cut out huge chunks of description of the setting, of the character, and they just jump to all action and dialogue. And I'm thinking, well, wait a second, who is this person? Why should I bother caring about them? But obviously this is not considered a failing anymore. I think this is considered, this is the way to do it. And that's kind of, it bothers me that the world has gone in that direction where we're too lazy or in too much of a hurry to read something that's well described. Like R.R. Martin doesn't do that. He describes it in great detail, but the action genre, it's the other thing that gets me is, this is just a little pet peeve, is no adverbs. I don't know if you've noticed that, but they've taken, it's supposed to be an adverb with an ly at the end. They just dropped the ly. So everywhere it's just adjectives describing an action, which is just, okay, this is a real grammar thing. I realize it. But, one other thing that kind of gets me is in the modern publishing industry, they've almost cut out the proofreaders and the editors. So things have gone from the author writes it, somebody reads the first little bit of it or whatever and decides, oh, this is a winner. And then it goes very quickly to being published. Very few, of course, very few novels. So I read this novel and I'm looking at all of these grammatical errors and wondering, how did this get published? It's in a book. They've printed up thousands of these things. And in the past, that never would have happened because the printed word, apart from Pulp Fiction, in regular books, the printed word was sacred. So you would have a dozen proofreaders and a bunch of editors that would all read the thing before it ever got to publication. But that's not the case anymore. It goes very quickly. I think possibly the reason is that they think most people just don't care that much whether there's a grammar error or not. And so it goes straight to I read this book, Strike Back, in which they made into, it was written by a real I think, at least that's what they said, written by a real special ops guy and full of action. And then they even made it into a series, TV series, which is also full of action. But the original book was filled with grammar mistakes. I just couldn't understand it. It blew me away. This was, you know, so much money involved, especially once it got to TV. That's crazy amount of money. And they couldn't pay somebody to proofread it before it went to publication. Okay. There's my pet peeve.
Okay. <Yeah. laughs> Well, and I'll kind of address this adverbs thing because I don't know where Stephen King got it, but I think Stephen King has really spread it to the writing world because he is very do not use adverbs.
It's his fault. I love his writing. He is. I should watch for that next time. Yeah.
But I interviewed a writer whose writing was just beautiful. It was very lyrical, just as sentence for sentence. It was a fantastic read. And he talked about adverbs and he discounted this advice completely. He says, what is this nonsense about not using adverbs? That's a part of speech. You're discounting an entire portion of the language.
It's very bizarre.
He says, that's nonsense. And then if you look at the writing of J.K. Rowling, she loves adverbs. But she uses adverbs in a way you've never seen before. It's fantastic.
Right.
So, okay. And to really see her do it, and it is very impressive. You've got to study the post-Harry Potter works.
Okay. Yes, I read one of them. That one in that small village. Was very
The Casual Vacancy.
Right, yes. Yeah. Beautifully written. But the subject matter was all so depressing.
It's so depressing. Everyone is terrible and doing terrible things to each other. Yeah.
There's not one likable person in the cast.
No. It is a strange little story. So, okay. Let's keep moving on here. All right. So, let's talk about publishing. How have you gone about publishing and what some of the marketing that you found has worked for you? Or maybe what some of the things you've tried and just didn't work and you don't recommend for other people?
Right. Well, I don't recommend the way I started, which is to learn how to publish a book and then to just put it out there because nobody will ever see it. So I don't recommend that. That's what I did with my first three novels. It seems like an awful lot of work for nobody to read it. And I also don't recommend you then blowing announcement on your Facebook page, which has all of your friends and family on it, because the truth be told, your friends and family do not want to read your book. They're going to be nice. And, oh, you read a book. Oh, isn't that nice? But they don't want to read it because I don't know what it is. There's something weird psychological about it. It's like the prophet that doesn't get any honor in his hometown. So they just can't see you as a writer. So they're not going to take your work seriously. So I think those two methods, not great. I think one method that I did start in the last year or so was to sort of create another group of people that only knew me as a writer. And that's so my Twitter account doesn't have any friends. I don't have any friends on my Twitter account. My Twitter account is only writers. So I just follow writers and I don't even follow magazines. I just follow writers. I think, is that how I met you, Joseph?
Probably.
Are you on Twitter?
I am on Twitter.
So. Okay. So then now I'm in it. At least I'm in a community now that sort of gets me as a writer, not English teacher, not somebody's son or something like that. So then, so that was good. So I have, 4,000 people or so that I can communicate on the same level with. And then the next thing, I found out about this. I'm not good at this yet. So this was a new thing for me, very new. And that was GMAS. I don't know if anybody heard of it.
Never heard of it. What is it?
Okay, GMAS is using your Google account and this add-on, I guess, that's called GMAS. What you can do is you can send out if you can get people's emails, then you can send out a mass email to 50 people and it won't be, they won't see that it's going to 50 people at once. Okay, so now I did this with Joseph, so I hope he's not offended.
Oh no, it's fine.
But once I made a connection with Joseph and was able to get his email, then I was able to put him on a list, on an email list, and then I was able to send out a little reminders or something like that, and I could send it to 50 people at once saying, okay, my book is going to be published at so and so a time, and then I could remind them, say, oh, it's going to be coming out in a week, oh, it's going to be coming out in 2 days, and I could remind everybody at the same time. So then I could at least communicate with 50 people. And if I could build up the email address, as long as I put them on different days, I could do 50 on one day and 50 on another day and 50 on another. So if you pay money, you can put like 1,000 or something like that on your email list. But if you're just doing the free account, so that's something you could try. Anybody could try that GMASS, GMASS, and it's connected to Google somehow. Okay, so that, but in order to get those first connections, then I would just contact people on Twitter and ask them, fellow writers, because I had already built up that community, fellow writers, and ask them if they wanted to do a book swap review, so that we would swap books and read each other's books and then write a review about each other's books. And this was really fun. I got to read Joseph's book, and he's reading mine, and then I think I wrote your review, yes?
Yes, you did.
Okay, good. And remind me, Joseph, your book was?
When the Sky Falls.
Right, When the Sky Falls. Wow, yes, that was great. In fact, honest, I didn't read that one. I listened to it. Yes, and so is it all true, Joseph? Are you allowed to tell me?
Well, I mean, the history is true and the science is true. Stevenson was a real person. The rest of the characters are fiction.
Okay.
So, and then, well, I guess you didn't have this in the audio, but in the text book, you can look up all the historical notes and the details. And so the best way to read the book is to assume it's true. And then sometimes what I've done is I've shifted historical events, or I've revealed scientific principles that wouldn't yet have been discovered. And I make notes of all those. So they talk about, what is it? I can't remember the name, chemical. So the 1988 Skyfall event in Portugal, they did experience one, but the way I describe it in the chapter is based on the 1948 Skyfall event from Ecuador. So like, okay. I said, so it is very much true, but I have shifted things for an optimal dramatic experience.
Right. Yeah. So that's, if you haven't read it, that's or listen to it, because it's also recorded with a professional reader. Is that correct?
Yeah. I thought he did a great job.
Was amazing. It was very, very well done. Yeah. So he's a voice actor, basically.
Yeah, he's a voice actor. And I mean, you can hear it. Like, he creates a distinct voice for each character. He really does a good job.
Yeah. So a very enjoyable way to read a book. Just listen to it. Reminds me of the old radio shows. My dad used to listen, like The Shadow and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Just listen to a book. Yeah. So, and in fact, that reminded me, because I that War of the Worlds podcast, that radio broadcast for War of the Worlds, I listened to the original because my dad showed me and then told me all about the big scare that occurred.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the aliens and everything. Yes, yeah, so, which is originally what I thought your book was going to be about, but as it turned out, that wasn't the case. So fascinating. Yes. So I can't remember what we're talking about. I just got into your book and then got interested.
So GMASS, you sent out these emails.
Yes. Okay. So then we were at the point of I would ask them, yes, if they wanted to swap reviews, and then the only downside of this is you, and it's an upside, is you had to read a lot of books. Because if you wanted 50 people to review your book, then that means you have to read 50 books.
Yeah.
So I'm an English teacher, so this I was actually very impressed by the indie books that I read. Because, you know, there's this stigma that an indie author is going to have, like, lots of grammar mistakes and then it's going to be a bad story. And this is not the case. Let me tell you right now. I've read lots right now of indie authors, and I'd say it's the other way around. The professional publishing industry doesn't care about grammar anymore, but your average indie author does. So that's okay. So there's my plug. Indie.
So, well, you know, so I am indie, and my experience is there are great indie writers out there. Some of my favorite authors are indie authors. But the issue is there's no gatekeepers. And so when you pick up an indie, you never know what you're going to get. Could be fantastic, could be barely readable. And that very low gutter level, you don't get it in traditional publishing. They filter that out. But they have a lot of stuff that's not very good that gets published too.
So, right, okay. I got to watch out for that. I guess it's going to happen.
Yeah. So like I used to do I would contact a lot of people and do the book swap thing, but there was enough novels I could barely get through. I'm like, no, I got to go about this another way.
Aha. Uh-huh. So, okay. So then you can tell me that way. I don't know if you're going to tell me now or you're going to tell me later.
Well, I will not agree to a swap until I've at least read a sample of the writer's work, because I'm like, I need to know that I can read this.
Right. Yes. So, that's a good point. Yeah. So at some point I might encounter one that I might just have to say, you know what? You don't want me to write a review. So that'd be the end of that. So that's my experience so far. That's as far as I've really gotten. So I'm going to, with Amazon here, I'll be doing the first week or so, whatever it is, for free. If I do the KDP, I can't remember what it's called, direct,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
And then that first week will be my promo week. And then after that, I'll see about whether or not I want to. Maybe I'll try and find a way to make that first book in the series free permanently. And then the rest of them, if anybody's interested, they would continue on and keep reading the series. So that's my game plan for the next 5 years or so.
So, okay. So that's the GMAS and Twitter are kind of the marketing platforms that you've worked on so far.
And, right.
So anything you're planning differently for this one? You're going to do the KDP and anything else?
And well, I was curious. Like I did look into somebody, maybe it was you, sent me some other advice for getting ads out there.
Yeah, I did send you some stuff on that.
So I kind of had a tacit agreement with my wife. I could pursue writing in my free time, long as it never cost any money. So far I've been able to make nickel and dimes, but I haven't spent anything. I just made sure I did all the labor myself.
Right.
But so if I do ads, so I won't be able to get around that. I'll have to.
You've published a lot of short stories. Maybe, you can take whatever money you've gotten from publishing short stories, be like, this is writing money. I get to spend this on ads.
Right. Yeah. But that, I hate to say this, but publishing short stories, you will never get rich. Even the best selling authors, when they publish their short story, they get like 6 cents a word. So 6 cents a word is not going to pay the rent. And for me, if I get 1 cent a word, I'm happy. That was great. Thanks. And many of the stories, I get nothing. It's just for the love of getting it on the internet that I would do.
Well, I mean, I guess you kind of have to look at maybe you haven't looked into this before, but how advertising works, because we're paying like 15 cents a click and we're expecting between 4 and 6 clicks to convert if our ad is working correctly.
So, oh, yes.
So that means, we're putting out, 60 cents to sell a book.
Right. Okay.
And so if you're making even a penny a word, a short story is going to pay for, at least one ad, sell 10 of them, you can run a whole campaign.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's going to take me a long time. It took me 20 years to publish 50 short stories.
Yeah. So, ideally you get that ball rolling. Right. And then, you can take the money from the novels you sell and roll those over.
Right. Yeah. Hopefully. But I think, at this stage in my life, because I'm a little bit older, then there is some spare money sitting around. So hopefully I'll be able to convince my wife I can do this.
Negotiate with her.
Yeah. Spend a little bit of money on it just to try it out and see what happens. I think she'd be okay with that.
So
okay. I will let you know.
All right. So is there anything else you wanted to cover? I send you this big list of all this stuff, and then I kind of pick a few things here and there to talk about. But was there one that really caught your interest that you thought about a lot and was something you wanted to talk about? Otherwise, I'm about finished on my end.
Okay. I was just going to mention. I know you sent me a little email saying you tried to find me on Amazon, and so yeah. Then I sent you a link to where I am. And I was just going to say, don't bother Googling David Wright because
you'll
just get that baseball player, and I really hate that guy. He ruined my name forever.
Even putting you into Goodreads, like, there's just too many people with that name.
I guess so. Yeah, I didn't think it was common, but apparently it is.
I won't tell you the guy's name because it's not the name he goes by. But he had a very, very, very common name, and so his author name is his wife's maiden name, which is Rue. It's very rare. And then he picked the first name of one of his favorite characters. So his name is Deke Rue. You type that into Google, he says, I am the number one thing that comes up. He says,
wow, that is brilliant.
Yeah. So he put that together, but then he Google tested it first.
Right.
And he said, yep, that's my pen name. And so for him, the pen name is all about exposure. It's not about hiding his real identity. It's
right.
He wanted to make sure if someone Googled his name, he was the person they found.
Wow. That's, I know, something to think about. Yeah.
So.
Okay. Then I'd have to republish everything on my pen name. I don't know.
Yeah. So if you've got a lot of reviews, that'd be a bit of a hassle. But.
Right. Yes. But it's okay. Like I said, I'm not in this to get famous. Yeah. Just to explore. Kind of like, I think a writer, I mean, if they have the interest, that this is something that, like I tell the students, you know, you should pursue it because this is something that's a passion for you. It can bring you great joy in the future. And it doesn't matter whether you become famous or not. Somebody is going to like what you've done and be able to chat with you about it. That would be my sign off.
Okay. All right. Well, then before you go, give us a shout out. Tell us where you can find your work, your Twitter, your Instagram, anywhere else that we can find you and connect.
Okay, great. So the workshop I started up is called Antimatter Dreams. That's all one word, .com, antimatterdreams.com. Pretty easy to find that one. It pops up. And then my Twitter address, I believe, is David Wright @Wright812. And I think the @Wright812 is the important part. And then I have an email address, my writer's website, the author's website, right?
Yeah.
And that's, goodness. What?
David.
Oh, thank you.
David Wright812.
Right. DavidWright812.wordpress.com. Yeah. And that's me. I'm all covered there.
So okay, and then your books are on Amazon, and then the free book is on Smashwords, which is codename Vengeance.
Right. Yes. Right.
So look up his books always by their title, not by his name. We just covered that. You will never find it. He's buried deep in those pages.
I'm at the bottom of the slush pile.
Yeah. So. So when David sent me the book, he sent me a EPUB for Kindle, and he sent a Mobi as well. But when it said that the document had said EPUB for Kindle, I downloaded that, tried to put it on my Kindle, and as the readers know, Kindle doesn't take EPUB. So then I had to plug it into Calibre and convert it over because I didn't recognize that you'd sent me a separate Mobi file. Anyway, so when I converted it over, it couldn't find the title. So it just posted out this huge long digit number. And I was like, I can't even remember the title of this book. So in my Kindle, I put in the title of the book just as your author name. So it just says David Wright by David Wright. Because it's an ARC. I couldn't pull it from Amazon.
Okay. So those would be some of the mistakes you want to avoid when you're doing a book swap with somebody. Yeah. Send them the right format.
So yes. Well, the format was in there, but it was the Kindle, the one labeled for Kindle was right. The wrong format. So.
Yeah. I since changed that, but yeah. Yeah, I did notice that myself, and I thought, okay, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, so I was trying to prep for the interview, read all his pages, and I was like, okay, well, I know his name is David Wright. Couldn't find him anywhere. I had to email him directly. I was like, can you give me some links? I can't find anything.
Right. Oh, wow. Okay.
So, yeah, so the titles are Codename Vengeance. What's the Cosmonaut one?
Flight of the Cosmonaut.
Flight of the Cosmonaut and Elf Lord. And then what is our release date on A Travel Guide to Murder?
Travel Guide to Murder is October 30th.
October 30th. So, and I will tell you, David writes very well. It's an enjoyable, fast-paced read. I really do like his writing. He's definitely one of the strongest indies I've read. So, yeah.
Wow, thank you very much.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. You do write very, very well. It's very clean. It's fast paced. There's none of the scenes really drag. Everything is just very smooth. So it's very well done. I haven't gotten to the end. So maybe you blow it. I don't know.
It's possible.
That happened. There was this book. I was reading it and I was loving it. And then I got to the climax and it was just so disappointing. I like downgraded it one star. And like we even talked about it briefly on a podcast. And I was mentioned, I was like, if you had asked me any point before the end of the book, I would have recommended it because I was loving it. If you ask me after I read it, I won't.
Oh, wow.
Because they dropped the ball on the ending and it kind of...
Yeah, ending is important.
It leaves exactly. A bad taste in your mouth. Yeah, so.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for your time.
You're welcome. And it was very nice talking to you, Joseph.
Yeah, you too.
All right, thanks for listening. As always, we would love it if you would leave us a review on iTunes. Let us know what you think of the different episodes we've been releasing recently, those on marketing and grammar and whatnot, so we can get a feel for what it is you'd really enjoy about the show and produce more of it. And as always, if you would like to support us, we would love it if you would leave us a review. The newsletter this month, it hasn't come out on the 1st. I think it's the 2nd or 3rd now. I'm a little bit behind because in it I had promised to release multiple drafts of a chapter where I was initially releasing the chapter as it is, going through filling out the staging of the action beats, and then finally flushing those action beats out. And I'm a little bit behind on that project, but I'm hoping to have that up in the next few days. And so the newsletter will come with the links to that once that's available on the website. And so that's been the delay there for those of you who've signed up for it. If you're interested, you can go to the website, click on the blog section for Start Writing, and you can sign up for the newsletter there. And there's all kinds of links in this one, and I've just put the exercises just right in the newsletter itself. I'm trying to make that a lot more effective, putting a lot more time into it and just trying to make it just more worth your time to open and read through it. So there's links to the Obama stumble on the oath because of the split infinitives. There's links to Carol and her obsessive incorrect grammar, as well as a link to that the multiple drafts there. So you can kind of see what happens when you build that staging in and what that looks like in the final version.